In the SEC, you gotta have them linemen.
Yes, on both sides.
Yep.
Yeah. That was probably the biggest surprise. Talk about Texas putting the is that Kyle Flood and Steve Sarkisian came in at just the time on the offensive. Because if it would have been 3 years earlier, Swiss cheese.
Like in Norman.
That's exactly right. It would not look that way. I mean,
yeah.
Texas fans were, we got overwhelmed by Georgia at times. Well, everybody gets overwhelmed.
Yep. All right, hey, in studio back. It's been a while since I've been in studio. Bobby Burton, really appreciate you, man. And you even came prepared. You got the Texas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm all about the burnt orange, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, so on Texas, you guys are kicking ass over there. Obviously, I want to talk a lot of Texas with you. But before we get to that, I always like to get people in here and get a little background, how they got into it. Because personally, that's to me is like the most fascinating thing.
Oh, very cool. So I graduated from the University of Texas. While I was there, I worked for the football team for 3 years. They started the video department for the football team. This is how old I am. I was one of the first hires to tape practice, video practice. I'd never done it before. And then we started taping every game. They used to do the film rolls for the games, but they had never done it for practice. Started doing that for practice that first year. I guess it was 1989. Graduated from Texas in 1992. Went through a coaching change in 1991-92 with John McAvick taking over for David McWilliams. And during that time frame, I'd always been interested in recruiting, and I had been cutting up tape of recruits for Texas. And during that three-month window, I really got knee-deep into recruiting and got deeper than I'd ever been before and really took a shine to it. I went to graduate from Texas in 92, went to work at the University of Houston. I was a volunteer assistant in the recruiting department for a year while I did grad school work there. And then from there, a guy reached out to me that was starting a newsprint publication called the National Recruiting Advisor in 1993. Went to work there for a year while coaching high school sports in Galveston, Texas. I did that for a year, kind of floating around trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, like most people might.
Yeah.
At that time. And really got really entrenched at the National Recruiting Advisor and eventually was made partner of that with a guy. And we sold that in 1999 to a precursor of Rivals.com called RivalNet. Based up in Seattle. When they bought that from us, I moved up to Seattle for 2 years to be the VP general manager of college and high school sports for RivalNet. 2 years later, the dot-com bomb happened where, you know, everybody's valuation of a internet company was reduced by tenfold, if not more, sometimes a hundred or just complete. And RivalNet was one of those. And then three partners that I met during that time, one of them, which is Shannon Terry, who's now the CEO of On3, was the CEO of Rivals.
As well as 24/7.
Founder of all of those. He and I got to know each other. Actually, when we were at RivalNet, I helped the purchase of Alliance Sports, which was Shannon's first company, along with Greg Goff. So after that, Shannon and I hooked up in 2001 officially, and I worked with Shannon off and on, or on, for the better part of 20 years. I've not done much. I worked with On3 a little bit, but I no longer work with them. But whether it was Rivals or 24/7, I've been the head of recruiting. I've been the head of editorial, COO.
Excuse me.
For a little bit of time, but it's just been fun. I've had a great career. And always at the middle of it, though, I've always felt a passion towards sports and sports journalism, both. Like, I like the true sport. Like, I love football.
Yeah.
I love watching. I love going and watching high school football if there's good football and good players
involved.
I just have always loved that from the minute I was a little kid. My dad used to take me to football games at the Astrodome. We had season tickets to the Oilers, if you'll remember that, you know. And
is that where they held the Texas state championships too?
No, well, they did. They used to hold some in the Astrodome, but it wasn't until around 2010 when the Texas UIL, which is the high school governing body, that they decided to have it at Jerry World, essentially, up in Dallas. Before, it would, you could have one on a single Saturday, you could have one high school championship in Abilene in front of 5,000 people, and one in Houston in front of 50 at the Astrodome. Now they've put it all in under one roof. Like, they really followed Louisiana's lead, if you want to know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Having all the state championships at the Superdome was really, really good. But as far as my journey personally, I feel extraordinarily blessed. I think no question I came in and helped start the industry and create it. And that I was lucky to do it at that time because there frankly weren't many people trying to do it.
Right.
And nowadays I look back and there are 500 to 1,000 reporters covering recruiting and college sports on a online perspective. When I started, there were 5 to 10. And the industry itself has boomed in connection with the popularity of college
sports and college football in particular.
Did you guys see that happening? Did you have that vision? Or how much of it was luck? How much of it was vision?
Both.
Yeah.
I think it was both. I mean, I think timing was the luck.
With the internet and getting popular?
With the internet coming on and we were young. Like, I'll give you an example. I had nothing to lose posting on the internet.
Right.
I didn't have a job with the Austin American Statesman or the Miami Herald or one of the Nashville Tennessean. I was a print publication, this small niche publication. I wasn't making, you know, $100,000 from as a sports writer. I was trying to just make do. And as a young person, you can take chances. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell my own kids right now. You're young. You can take chances, you know. Later in life, it's harder to take chances when you have responsibilities, wife, kids,
yeah,
et cetera. And so timing was luck. There's no doubt about that. I mean, just came into it at the very right time. But vision, I think, is really what we had. Not just myself. Shannon Terry's unbelievable. Greg Goff, the former CTO of Rivals, unbelievable. In that regard. And I think we combine not only a love of really doing it and trying to do it the right way and working hard with a passion for the game that came through to people. And that's, I felt like that's what Rivals was at the very start of its iteration. I don't think it's necessarily there anymore. I think that's what 24/7 was at the start of it. I don't necessarily think it's there anymore. That's what On3 is trying to carry forward right now, is take, because I can tell you, I know Shannon, he's one of my best friends in life. He loves college sports. Like, it's genuine. It's not BS with him. Somebody comes in and has a big checkbook and buys something, they may or may not really love college sports. And so that's, that vision happens when you love college sports. It happens because you're invested in what the
outcome is,
right? I mean, I want college sports
to be great.
I want college
football to be great.
So while you're building a company to do that, whether it's On Texas Football, where
I'm at now,
in particular covering the University of Texas, or at a Rivals 24/7, On3, any of those, you want to see people that are personally invested in the benefit of, and for the fans, bring things to the fans that are unique and interesting. Recruiting, we brought to the fans for the first time ever in the early 2000s in a different way. And we're still doing that. I mean, there's still new ways to bring fans closer. This podcast is one of those,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you and I both do a video and / podcast that cover it at a deeper level than ever before.
And
there are other there are going to be other people that do that too. And so it's just a continual iteration. But I'm very blessed. I've had the career and been around the people that I've been around throughout my career.
And I'm not a negative person at all. I try to see the positive in everything. But Josh Pate, he came in here and he kind of got me looking at TV and the executives. And you hit on something important there. The love of football that you have, that Shannon and Terry has, that I have, that gives me hope that things are going in the right direction. But how much concern, if at all, do you have for the fact that it's seemingly seems like the TV executives, they hold all the a lot of the power, and not even TV executives, but people in charge. Like, I think the worst one is Kevin Warren, who tried to cancel football during COVID.
Yeah.
And then, you know, blew up the Pac-12, killed it, and then ran off to the NFL. Like, yeah. Did he give a shit about college football? I don't think he did. I think he was doing his job. I think he did well for the Big Ten. But at some point, what's good for the Big Ten, what's good for the SEC, if it kills the rest of it, I think in the end, that could hurt the SEC, could hurt the Big Ten.
I will say this. This is an interesting fact. I don't know if you know this.
But
every major league in the Big 12, SEC, Big 10, ESPN, run by Jimmy Pitaro, who I know, I used to know really well. I don't know him well at all anymore. I haven't talked to him in 10 plus years. But every single one of them are native New Yorkers.
Did you know that?
No.
So Sankey is.
Right.
Petitti is, Brett Yormark in the Big 12, Jimmy Pitaro. They're all native New Yorkers. That's not necessarily the bastion of college sports. It is the bastion of media,
right?
Though. And I will say this, to your point about where's the love, the genuine love and affection for college sports. I think Jimmy Pitaro has that, because I've known him personally. I think that Greg Sankey actually respects just in my very limited interaction with him at down in Destin at the SEC
media days.
Haven't had him one-on-one for an interview, but I feel like he's a great steward of college. And so when you talk about it gives you hope that people have passion, I agree. At some level, though, there are people that can be stewards of a brand that aren't necessarily their first thing isn't passion about this, right? And I think there's a place for this. I mean, Sankey's an attorney at heart at some level, right? That's how he got into this, and he kind of weaved his way through. But there's place for both, is what I would say to you. But at the core, I think the fans have to push the game forward, to your point. And so, and Pitaro at ESPN, for example, reacts to that. How do the fan
want to push the game forward?
And it's all about that.
I mean, I've known. Okay.
I think that, and Jimmy played football at Cornell. Not a lot of people know that, right? But the idea, or at least was recruited, the idea for me is that you can have stewards, but you also have to have that passion simultaneously, at least tangentially.
Mm-hmm. But before you guys started doing recruiting online, was I remember like 1-800 numbers. You remember that?
Or not 800. 800 was free. 900, baby.
Yeah, it was like a per minute call. I mean, was that kind of right before you guys started doing
your thing? Oh, yeah. So I was a big. I mean, you've reached 1-900-933-9776. And I still know it. Yes, that was major part of the revenue stream. We had right at 5,000, 6,000 paid print subscribers. And then we had a 900 hotline that covered the major
teams,
whether it was Texas, Notre Dame, or
Tennessee, or Alabama,
Georgia, et cetera, that people could call into for $1.49 or $1.59 a minute and get updates on their favorite team. That was the true moneymaker of that business, because it didn't cost anything to call in and record that. So it was really easy. Whereas if you had a print magazine, it cost money to mail it.
Yeah.
It cost money to create it, print it,
all that stuff. So,
But some people made that. But I will say this, like, I feel very fortunate. I think I was the only one of that original group that had a print publication that made a full positive transition online. There used to be a guy named Alan Wallace that ran Super Prep Magazine. He didn't make a successful transition from print to online. Tom Lemming is still not. He's still just who he is. He's writing a print publication primarily.
Right.
You can Max Emfinger. You can go on and on. The guys that didn't really make that successful transition. And I do think that part of the reason I was able to do it, Mike, is really simple.
It's my
age. I was a heavy internet user
early on.
I glommed to it. And so those guys, they were 10, 15 years older than me. Right. And I was comfortable with
computers.
I grew up around them a little bit, used them. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas those guys, they didn't. And so I, again, fortunate, and also met the right people. I mentioned
that earlier.
Yeah. And that, how key has that been? Cause we had Shannon in here and we talked about Rivals. I think he said it was, you know, the message board, and obviously that's for like the hardcore people.
Mm-hmm.
And then 24/7, it was a lot of SEO for people that don't know. That's like search engine, getting people to click on links and things of that nature. And now On3, and they've fully embraced video. You really got to stay on top of where things maybe not today, but will be tomorrow. What if you had your crystal ball, where do you think that's going in the future?
If my crystal ball worked, I think I could, you know, I really think that it's about fan involvement at this point. Kind of reached this inflection point where 100,000 seat stadiums are being sold out. There's no more tickets. You can't get inside that stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen this event place called the Cosm.
I don't think so.
In Dallas. They literally.
Ooh, yeah. Is that where you go sit down and there's a massive screen?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
If you've ever gone to one of those events and seen, and I think they have a couple other venues around the country. They have a camera on the goalposts. And you're literally seeing views of the field that you're not used to seeing. And it's like they're super, like they're life-sized on the screen in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Bringing fans even closer to the game. Because look, I mean, I like other sports. I like basketball. I like baseball. I'm a big Astros fan, you know, but football to me is the ultimate sport because it's can't just have Michael Jordan scoring 30 right. a game and go win a
championship.
You got to have a team of guys. I love that. And then even though they try to legislate the hitting out of football at some level with the crown of the helmet, which I agree with, but
right.
The hitting, the physical nature of, I just love football. I mean, I enjoy it. And in that setting at the Cosm, it's pretty darn cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's ways that can even
go further.
But bringing fans from a sports journalist perspective, you and I, it's bringing more education towards different elements of the game, whether that's bringing Greg Sankey on for an interview and really getting into the details of what NIL and the House settlement means, getting deeper into NIL, which Shannon is really he's dived into more than anybody in the market,
in my opinion.
Right.
You see people kind of glomming onto that now,
3 years later,
4 years later. There are a lot of aspects. You know, what is the salary cap going to look like in college sports? That's going to be like people cover that for a living in
the NFL right now.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be people that cover that for a living
in college football.
We're not thinking. I mean, a lot of people don't think that way. I can guarantee you, Shane and Terry and a host of other executives at that level are going to be thinking that way
in the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, and just how different is recruiting and all that in the NIL and the transfer portal? Because I'll just give you, for me personally, like I used to follow that stuff so closely, and it's not that I know it's still important, And I've fully been on board with paying the players because I think this system has been, they bastardized it to where I always cite this, and this is honest to God's truth. I was in middle school when I found out the NCAA gets paid $1 billion with a B annually to televise the NCAA tournament, and like the athletes were not allowed to be paid. I mean, that's asinine. So I got no problem with the players getting paid, but to me, it's like, why follow recruiting when seemingly, you know, every year they're free agents and there's so much movement. It's just, I focus my attention elsewhere because I feel like it's almost not worthwhile to follow.
I would disagree with you. And here's why. 50%, even in recruiting before the advent of NIL, you'd be lucky if 50% of your players that you signed ever, you know, made a dent
in your roster.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the natural. You know, you sign 25, 12 or 13 are going to play for you.
Right.
Now, 14 or 15 may play early and you get all excited, but three or four are going to peel off. That's always been the case. So fundamentally, you're with the idea that they can now transfer out, I would say this, if you're a fan of a Texas, a Tennessee, a Florida, an Ohio State, a Notre Dame, you're getting more from the portal than you're giving. And so 65 to 70% of the schools that make up the fan passion are not being hurt by the portal. They're actually being helped. Tennessee's being helped by the portal. Texas, Alabama. Well, they're not being hurt
by the portal.
And so, I mean, Texas alone, Matthew Golden just ran a 4.29. Okay. He spent his first year, 2 years at the University of Houston. It probably pisses off Houston fans that Matthew Golden is going to be remembered as a Texas Longhorn. It doesn't piss off Texas Longhorn fans,
right.
You know, and there are about 10 to 20X Texas fans at the University of Houston.
Yeah.
So I think it's, I actually think that recruiting, as long as you keep it about why he chooses
the school,
how he fits that school and how good is he, is still very, very compelling. I think the transfer portal is
even
more compelling, right? Because you know that guy's going to theoretically help you
next year.
I mean, Notre Dame and Ohio State had first-year starting quarterbacks at their schools come in via transfer.
Right.
Is Notre Dame in the national championship without Riley Leonard?
No.
Is Will Howard, I mean, they took Will Howard and kicked Kyle McCord to Syracuse.
Right.
So I think that while I understand, I'm not trying to take it away from you, I would just challenge you to think about recruiting a little differently, in that it's always been the same. Only about 50% of everybody you sign every year are really going to make a dent in your program. Now you want to know about all of them because you don't know which 50% that is. And they're still going to do it. I mean, you look at Texas class right now. They had 14 guys at the NFL combine. I think 10 of those
guys they got via just recruiting.
So recruiting matters. It may matter less in some nuanced way, or not have the soap opera drama about, you know, I'm going here because my mom's second cousin, you know, dated the strength coach, you know. But I think there's still a compelling argument
for recruiting to really matter.
All right, I've asked you all these questions, Bobby, just to soften you up. How much does Texas pay for their roster?
A lot.
Can you give us a ballpark based on what you know?
Definitely north of 25. Beyond that, I think there's some nuance to that. Texas isn't paying a dime for Arch Manning to be sponsored by Red Bull or Uber. So, his NIL value, may be $6 to $10 million a year. Well, Texas One Fund or the University of Texas may be paying
very, very little of that.
Right. Because but I think Ohio State last year, based on my sources, had the most expensive roster. I think Texas was top five.
Clearly.
And you think that's just, will Texas keep that up as long as they're chasing a championship? Or like, because where I'm at, I didn't think Ole Miss, and I certainly didn't think Missouri, after missing the playoff, would come back and still have all this money to spend in the portal, but it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're winning at a high level. And the way I look at it, I think most people look at it this way. You know, Michigan won, so obviously Ohio State had to spend all the money to even the score, so to speak. Texas chasing that championship. A&M's chasing that. Tennessee. All these schools that are chasing it are spending, which is all legal. I'm not saying it's bad, but they're chasing it. But I would imagine Texas is uniquely set up to where even if they do win a national championship, they're still going to keep the spending up because they're going to want to keep it going.
Yeah, and we'll see what the House settlement means. Right? I think that's a fair, like, how does that curb or curtail how people spend money in NIL? I don't think that the total number is going to go down. I don't care what Deloitte and Touche or Deloitte says. I mean, what is fair market value? Well, you know, look, you can go Livy Dunn right now at LSU destroys all fair market value.
Right.
And so how do you say that? I feel like that's, you know, they want fairness, et cetera, and everybody be paid equal. The world's not equal, bud. I learned that a long time ago, you know? and so for Texas, I mean, Texas fans are very, very proud of their university, very, very proud of their football program, love to win, love football. I think Texas is going to be hyper competitive in that category as long as it's legal. And I want to say this. I think it's very interesting. There is no pro, and I cover college football for 30 years professionally. I've only been covering Texas, actually, just Texas, for 10, 15 years
or so.
But Michigan has always been this bastion of, oh, we do it the right way. You're a Michigan man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Bryce Underwood's a Michigan man now. For what reason? I mean, yeah. And so I think that all of this preconceived notion about paying players is what it is. The world changes. And you got to be willing to adapt and move through it the best you know how. I think that's important. And I think that the best teams, the ones that want to win, whether that's Ole Miss or Missouri, they'll be there. Now, I don't know that they have the staying power of a Texas, of an Ohio State, of a USC,
potentially.
Because you got to also remember, I mean, Austin, and the NIL available there, a capital city of the state of Texas, 2 million plus people, one of the fastest growing cities in the country. The NIL opportunities there compared to Starkville are stark
in comparison.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of, they're trying to make it fair. And I don't think college football's never been inherently fair. They've had this facade of fairness. Has it really been fair?
Well,
Kalen DeBoer wants it to be fair again.
Well, I mean, but that's just it. I mean, he's talking. Where did that come from? I mean, I actually like Kalen DeBoer. I mean, by the way, I think he's a tremendous coach, and I think that'll prove out over time. But that was a tone deaf comment. I mean, Alabama has been the seat of college football for 15 years with Nick Saban, and so for Kalen DeBoer to want to go back to even. I think Kalen DeBoer was unaware of the wiles of the SEC. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
Saban, wiles and ways of the SEC.
Saban still gets butthurt about all that stuff. I don't know if you saw, I'm trying to remember what game. I think College Game Day was at Notre Dame. Must have been it was for the playoff. And they had a comedian on there, Shane Gillis, who was mocking Alabama never paid, right?
Yeah.
And apparently off camera, he lost it on him. So yeah. Still, that's a very sensitive topic with him.
I can appreciate that, but it doesn't have to be Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, I mean, 10 years ago, there were McDonald's bags being exchanged
right.
with cash in Tennessee. I mean, there college sports. And it, and so it doesn't have to be Nick Saban to be the bad actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he would love, Nick Saban would love to say, I had complete control of that Alabama program. And he probably had as much control as any single human could ever have over a program. He didn't have complete
control.
And that's where I think, and I think that's bothersome to college athletic directors, college
coaches.
They want to be able to have complete, but dude, you can't.
Yeah.
This is the real world. We don't live in
utopia.
And so whether it's, you know, the look, there are a lot of stuff. The reality of it
is,
I think that players now, some of them are being overpaid. Some of them are being underpaid.
That's just
like real life.
Yep.
I mean, some people are overpaid for their podcasts and some people are underpaid. Some people are overpaid yeah. for their plumbing job and some people are underpaid for their plumbing job.
Right.
That's just the way of the world. And I think college, as long as the sport, it's what I get at. Take all this other, Nick Saban said this, or Greg Sankey said that. I don't care. As long as the sport looks great, you go to a game, you get excited when they score a touchdown. Get excited when there's a big hit. Get excited when there's a pass play that, how in the hell did he catch that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? You know, and then, like, there's cigar smoke coming out of a Tennessee stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That's what college
football's about.
It's not about this all this off-field stuff. And as long as we stay true to that, man, I'm very bullish on college football as a whole. Know whatever I mean, NIL take whatever shape you want, recruiting take whatever shape you want. You just go play ball
on Saturday.
And like I said, what other spots are there? How many stadiums are filled to 100,000
people right now
on a given
Saturday? It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a higher, you know, how many NFL stadiums
are filled to 100,000?
Zero, yeah,
zero. Because people care. If you care about a college team, you're vested.
Well, I care. So let me correct you real quick. It was not McDonald's bags. It was Chick-fil-A bags.
Okay.
So we're a little bit.
That's a true Southern thing, though, too, right?
We're a little bit classier in Knoxville.
But I mean, look, I don't. My point isn't that. Tennessee was one. I mean, Kentucky, you know, Eddie Sutton. I go back to Eddie Sutton and FedEx. You know, I mean, that's the first time I'd ever heard of it. FedEx actually was the Kentucky Eddie Sutton scenario. But I feel like the idea that this stuff didn't happen is whitewashing history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not.
I'm not here for it. I mean, I've been there and I've talked to recruits back in 1992 before there was an internet. And what they were telling me, I don't think the 17-year-old kid had the wherewithal to lie,
mm-hmm.
right? And the understanding of everything involved. But no, it is what it is.
Hey, how good do you think Arch Manning is going to be?
It's going to be really good. The question is how soon. And I've been high on him since high school. More athletic than you think, Mike. I think that's a big piece of it. Runs well, athletic, but not the juke and jive type of
athletic
at all. Fast. And he's the other thing that will surprise you is how big he is. Like, he's significantly bigger
than Quinn Ewers.
Quinn Ewers 6'2", 210. Arch Manning will be 6'4", 6'5", and
230.
He's a bigger,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? A bigger dude. I'm a big fan, and I think that he's got the right mindset. We'll see if Texas has the pieces around him that they did this year. That's a good question mark and a fair question. But as far as a quarterback prospect.
He's as good as they come.
Mm-hmm. He is as good as they come. Knowledge, understanding that, you know, I make a bad play, I got to get back up and go to the next play. And he's got all of that.
It's just ingrained
in him. And
you know, I think
I go watch practice. And Sark opens
2 to 3 practices a year
in both the spring and the fall. So you see him about 5 to 6
times outside of games.
And he's just got a whip, got a great arm, stronger arm than Quinn
Ewers. Know how quick feet for a big guy, quicker feet than Quinn Ewers.
Mm-hmm. So I would say that there's a chance Texas
is better at quarterback.
A very strong chance by the
end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Like the first 6 games, getting his feet wet really for the first time as a true starter. I think get the back half of the schedule, Texas has a chance to have one of the better quarterbacks
in the country, if not the best.
And he should be uniquely qualified to handle all the hype and the expectations with the family, obviously. And then I used to work for an aggregate site. I mean, we've been writing about him since he was in 8th grade. You know what I mean? So I think he's used to the attention, the spotlight, and everything that comes with all that.
He's used to it. And from what I'm told, I don't have a lot of firsthand experience with him. From what I'm told is wired.
Right.
So you can teach a guy everything in the world and how to handle the hype and how to handle media training and all this other stuff. And then, but can they actually put that
teaching into effect?
He's wired the way.
To your point, he seems to be wired right. Mm-hmm. In that regard, that it's not going to be an issue.
And another thing I forgot, the way they handled his recruitment seemed very businesslike, very professional. He wasn't out there. Not that that's necessarily the wrong way to do it, but I thought that was interesting. How confident are you that Sarkisian wins a national championship at Texas?
50-50. You know, I'm not super confident because
it's
part of its luck. Part of it, I mean, injuries,
mm-hmm.
You know. I think that anybody that's sitting here saying, oh, Ryan Day's going to go on a run, he's now going to win 4 championships in 10 years, I think they could be right. They could win 0.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you lose your quarterback or you go up and you play Michigan and they beat you again. at Texas, the gauntlet in the SEC is huge. Texas plays, they play Ohio State to start this year. Then they'll play Ohio State back-to-back. Then they'll play Michigan the year after that. And then they've got 2 games in a row, non-conference, with Notre Dame to start, I think, 29-30 or 30-30. A hell of a schedule.
And that's on top of likely a 9-game SEC.
So now, I don't know, Mike, what the playoffs are going to be. But even getting into them, it's going to be ratcheted up a notch. But I think that at the same time I say 50-50, that's pretty high odds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would take that if you were Tennessee,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're Alabama, in the next 5 years, I'm going to win 1 national championship. And I'd say you got 50-50
odds you're going to do it. Those are pretty high odds.
Mm-hmm. But I was somewhat, when Sark got the job at Texas, somewhat reticent because of how he left USC, I'll be blunt. He hadn't necessarily succeeded at USC really high level. But he came in, and I tell you what, he's stuck to what he knows how to do, how he knows how to recruit, how he evaluates players, how
I
can't get a bigger advocate or believer in Steve Sarkisian now than me, having watched how he
turned
the culture around. I mean, in 2 years, they've had 25 players go to the NFL combine. It's ridiculous. I mean, Texas, I think in 2021, they didn't have a single player drafted. 2020.
And then didn't they have like a huge stretch of offensive linemen not even get drafted?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so he is completely turned it around. Now, there are people around him that helped him do that. I don't want to belittle or diminish those guys, but you know, Nick Saban, we're not talking about Nick Saban's assistants right now when we talk about him either. So right. I feel like Sark,
I think he's
uniquely fit to handle this current state of college
football too.
Cause he's got some NFL pedigree with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's had two tremendous mentors in Pete Carroll, primarily Nick Saban secondarily. But takes the best for both. But man, the one thing that I will tell you is that,
you know,
Texas, and under Steve Sarkisian is going to do it his way. And so far I would give him all the leash in the world to do it his way, because I mean, look, I'm a Texas fan for life. I don't begrudge myself. I don't pretend like some of these guys that cover teams. Oh, well, I'm not really, look, I grew up rooting for the Longhorns. Earl Campbell's my hero
to this day.
Right. And so, what he's done is done it his way, and the product on the field
is tremendous. It's just been tremendous. Is it
perfect?
No.
But two straight college semifinal appearances, that doesn't happen
by chance.
One, I always talk about it. It's like you may record Tainted Love and be a one hit wonder 1 year. I mean, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Do it twice, you ain't a one hit wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done it twice. Done it.
I mean, he's
done it his
way.
Really, really impressed with him. Whole organization
as a whole.
With the support he gets from Chris Del Conte and chairman of the board, Kevin Ellis.
Life.
That needed a change fundamentally
for Texas. And it fits like a glove right now for him.
But I would put it 50-50. Because I just think it's so dang hard.
Mm-hmm.
They've got as good a talent as anybody in the country. I think the only, Alabama's up there. Georgia's certainly up there. Ohio State. But I'll tell you right now, the Texas quarterback room beyond Arch Manning, it ain't bad. So if anybody thinks that,
you know,
that's one thing about Sark, you're going to have a quarterback. And,
you know, we'll see if everybody else does too. Keeps up having.
Georgia's going to go through
that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does Georgia have the next quarterback? Kirby's not a quarterback guy.
Right. And the one they had, they tried to run him off every year.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
no, they didn't want Stetson.
Yeah. Or did they want Justin Fields? You know, who goes?
Right.
They take Jake Fromm over him. Look, Kirby's a tremendous coach. I'm not taking anything
away from him, because what
he's done is awesome. But Texas is one of those teams that's set up for success in part because their head coach, I think quarterbacks in this day and age, college football really get you into the conversation unless you're just overwhelmingly talented at every other position.
Mm-hmm.
And, Brian Day will do that.
Steve Sarkisian will do that,
I think.
Any concern that he'll leave for the NFL?
Reasonable.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to win a national championship.
He probably wants to stay in Coach Arch.
Yeah. That's got to be a consideration. Like, he is a quarterback coach at heart, and he knows to win, you got to have a quarterback. You go take over. Say he gets approached by the Raiders, hired Pete Carroll. Who's your quarterback? Right?
Yeah.
I'd rather take my chances in the college football Arch Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, while the NFL can get paid more a little bit in college, they don't
necessarily
get paid more. And he had his opportunities. I mean, Jimmy Sexton, that's talk about a guy you need to have on your show.
Oh, I'm trying.
Okay. That's a guy you need to have on your show, right? I mean, the tales he could probably tell. But my point with you, as it relates to Sark and the NFL, he's going to have options. You win, you're going to. Nick Saban had options his entire career. Kalen DeBoer almost could have taken an NFL job instead of Alabama if he would have let that play out a little bit. they're going to have those options. But look, the amount of autonomy you have as a college head coach over personnel decisions, you're not getting that with the Green Bay Packers. You're unlikely to get that with the San Diego Chargers,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I think that someone like Sark may want that so that he's responsible
for the product on the field
mm-hmm. entirely.
Right.
In the NFL, you can't really,
you know, there's so many different factors. You can't, you know, the NFL draft itself is
trying to make for parity.
Right.
Whereas in college football, I can build it the way I want to build it. It's my job
to go get that wide receiver. It's my job to go get the pass rush. It's my job to get the quarterback.
Can you sum up hatred for Oklahoma? What comes to your mind? Because I'll tell you a quick story. When Oklahoma whipped the hell out of Alabama, fans rushed the field. I don't know if you saw this, but Stutzman, their linebacker, camera zoomed on him. You know, he's on the field getting stormed, horns down. And I'm like, you just beat Alabama. Why are we horns down? And that's when it like encapsulated that the hatred between those two for me.
So I think Ole Miss beat Mississippi State or something in a basketball game the other day, and I saw horns down. And I was like, where does that come from? But no, it does encapsulate the mindset that's their hand signal is, you know, the A&M fight song is saw your horns off or saw the varsity's horns off. I mean, Texas has one of those teams that either love or hate. And Sark's funny. He calls them the Raiders. He likes to embody
the Raiders of the
NFL. You know, they're the one team everybody loves
to hate.
I think that Texas
is kind of like that. They're very polarizing.
Because,
you know,
oh, they're big mouths
or
their money tries to do the talking for them, but they don't really back it up. They're soft. All those things are kind of code words
for,
I don't necessarily
like Texas.
You know? And so that it's a, you know, I, as a former guy, and I've seen the evolution of it, I think it's
funny. It's just, I don't think Texas fans actually think twice about it.
Really, way of the world.
Mm.
And Oklahoma fans, you know, I think
they teach their kids how to do that too.
Yeah.
I mean, Oklahoma fans are true. I mean, they're diehard college. Like, I respect a lot of fan bases. I really do. I mean, even though I'm at Texas, I respect the Oklahoma fan base. They are diehard. I'll give you a story. My first time I ever went to the Texas OU game, I was 18 years old. I was a student at the University of Texas. And me and my college roommate went up there to watch the game. Went up the night before, Friday before. And, of course, on our budget, I grew up in middle class. Our budget for a hotel was like
$45 a night.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't, we ain't going to stay at the Hyatt, you know? And so we bought the cheapest, found the cheapest hotel room we can. And we're going up there and, we go and go check into our room. And as we walk into the elevator, there's gotta be 55, 65 year old man, got his OU crimson shirt on, got some cowboy boots, kind of got a weathered Oklahoma face because beaten in the sun and prairie. And he goes, hope you boys, I mean, we're wearing our Texas
ball caps or whatever.
Hope you boys brought your crying towel. You're going to need it tomorrow. And I'm like, holy. I'm just going to the elevator, dude. And so that was my first introduction, like true introduction
of that. And
I love college football.
Rivalries.
Texas A&M being back.
Yeah.
Or as a person that grew up with it.
It's just huge. I mean, people underestimate the Arkansas rivalry being back for Texas. I mean, that.
Yeah. The Big 12 and Arkansas going to the SEC hurt a little bit, especially some old guard Texas fans. A&M going to the SEC.
The home football schedule for Texas has sucked for 10 years
mm-hmm.
because of that.
in my opinion. So you only get them every other year, obviously.
Yeah.
At home, but I mean, you want to see Texas play Iowa State or A&M? You want to see Texas play Kansas or Arkansas, where they've played Arkansas for decades?
Mm-hmm.
I think that
that's been an issue. So
I'm happy it's back.
Do you think that's the best part of joining the SEC is getting those games back?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and like I was just talking to a guy from Georgia, the Texas goes to Georgia and Florida
this year.
Really great away game. Mississippi State. I was talking to a guy from Georgia earlier today before we
recording this,
and he's giving me the lowdown on how hotels in Georgia work, right? On game day in Athens, they're all sold out. And so you got to, that's something that Texas fans, they weren't trying to go to Ames, Iowa,
right,
or Manhattan, Kansas. They wanted to fly in and fly out the same day. Mm-hmm. How do I get to the Kansas City airport by 9 a.m. and leave on the 8 o'clock flight?
Right. Night?
You know, but these are all great, great things. I can't wait for Texas to play in Baton Rouge one day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that game kind of got stolen by COVID. Texas,
right,
playback with them scheduled got stolen by COVID. So I can't, there are games like that I can't wait for Texas to go back to the Grove. I went there. Texas played there early in the
mid 2000s, I think.
Tennessee fans are dying to play
God,
Texas.
Yes, yeah. I've been to games in Knoxville,
obviously, and
I
look all of those, Mike. You
name it, and I think it's awesome too that Texas fans got a taste of it the year before they entered when they went
to Tuscaloosa,
mm-hmm.
because that was awesome. You were a Texas fan. That was almost nirvana. You were going, and I mean that in a genuine way, because the party before was great, you know, and then you go to an afternoon game at a revered stadium playing a great coach, and then your team kicks butt. I mean, come on, sign me up. If you're a college football fan, if that happened at Tennessee or whoever you're a fan of,
yeah,
sign me up. I mean, that's something that the SEC, I think, brings.
Maybe the Big 12 just didn't. I mean,
they lost Texas Tech and
Baylor and TCU.
Those weren't really rivalries. Like it or not, Texas always looked at them as
a true.
They didn't even look at them as little brother. It's more like little cousin.
Mm-hmm.
I say that, and now I'm going to get hate mail. it is true.
It is true.
Well, I know you don't follow A&M near as close as you do Texas, but why do you think they're always 8-4?
Well, I think the SEC has something to do with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in the Big 12, I think they were 8. I think the stat is 25 of the last 27 years, they've lost 4 or more games. I mean, it's incredible. It doesn't matter who the coach is. It doesn't matter the players. It's 8-4 every day. I call them Texas 8-4 now until further notice, you know?
I may have to use that one, if you don't mind, because I think the Texas fans would like that. I think that A&M missed a real opportunity with Kevin's.
Yeah, and Manziel.
Yeah, after Manziel, they had a chance because they were dominating the state of Texas
in recruiting.
And Alabama and Georgia hadn't really hit the state of Texas, and Ohio State hadn't really hit the state of Texas in recruiting. They had a chance there. And then they had that unbelievable class 4 years ago now. Where they had some fun before NIL was legal. I'll just put it that way, in my opinion. A&M's, you know, I can't
put your finger on it.
If I could, they'd try to fix it that way themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes down to,
they just haven't executed well.
Like, they don't – maybe Mike Elko's the guy to get them
to execute better.
But I think with Dennis Franchione, they didn't have the player. Mike Sherman
– He's a
– He's not a pro – he's not a college coach. He's a pro coach. I mean, he wasn't – Mike Sherman didn't go for it on 4th-and-1 from
the 45.
Right.
I mean, that's a college coach goes for that.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Right. So as good a coach as he wasn't necessarily a college
coach.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Sumlin,
just
imploded. Jimbo Fisher imploded. He let the inmates run the asylum.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
A little bit.
We'll see what Elko does. I like him as a coach. I think he's hard nosed. I think he recruits fairly well. We'll see. Question there, and their offense. All these defensive coaches have to kind of catch lightning in a bottle on
offense, in my opinion.
And so, is Marcel Reed like him?
But
is he the guy? Does he strike you as an SEC championship quarterback?
I don't know. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Last thing for you, Bobby. Really appreciate your time. You already said Earl Campbell's your favorite Texas player.
By far.
But who is the best of all time? Is it
Earl Campbell?
Is it better than Vince Young? Or?
Better. There's levels, right? I mean,
I loved Ricky Williams.
Yeah, Ricky was tremendous, but Ricky never made the awe-inspiring run that Earl Campbell. I mean, if you grew up and you ever watched Earl Campbell really run, Ricky was maybe was a better running back than Earl Campbell. I know this is going to sound, but he wasn't. Ricky was never MVP of the NFL. I mean, Earl Campbell, his first 2 years,
I think.
1 year he's the runner up, and the next year he won the MVP. I mean, it's just, he was a force of nature. Similarly, Vince Young was a force of nature in college football.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Vince Young's probably a better college player than Earl Campbell, because Earl
was injured his junior year and then came back his senior year
because he played that
position. But
yeah, Vince Young was a freak. Earl Campbell, in my opinion,
was a freak.
There are only so many guys
you could point to in college football where you'd say, yeah,
a dude was a freak. I mean, Ricky Williams, a great player, was a freak. I don't know. I mean,
but Texas, I mean,
Vince Young, I was at that game, the Rose Bowl. Both years, I saw the Michigan game, the USC game afterwards.
And
that's as electric
as a stadium
I've ever been in my entire life. I go back and watch the game on
TV,
that Rose Bowl, 2005 Rose Bowl. And I don't think there's ever been a game that's encapsulated that on television
as well as they did.
Like, you could feel
it was
awesome. Now, maybe I'm a Texas fan, and so I'm
biased. I get it.
No, I think a lot of people would rate that as the best college game of all time.
Yeah. Well, it's not, but it wasn't just, it's Dan Fouts was great on the call.
Keith
Jackson was still hanging on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You saw a 35 or however many game win streak USC came into
it.
Mm-hmm.
That they did a tremendous job bringing that to the audience, but to be there, with my wife, friends, dad.
It was freaking awesome.
Oh,
I sat next to, by the way, I was in the, I mentioned my wife. She was actually in the stands. I was in the, what do you call it? The press box.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting next to Jackie Sherrill.
Really?
And he goes, I looked over. I mean, this is a true story. I don't know if Jackie Sherrill remember it. I looked over and there's about 5 minutes to go in the game. And Jackie Sherrill goes,
"Don't give that dude a chance."
he's looking at Vince Young. He's like, "Don't give that
dude a chance."
And then after the end of the game, Jackie Sherrill stands up
and just says, "Never seen anybody like him."
Goes on upstairs. that was it. So as a Texas fan that booed Jackie Sherrill vociferously as a young person, that was heartening, I guess, to see or hear.
Hey, before you go, can you tell my audience, I'm sure they know already, but how to find your stuff?
Yeah, it's ontexasfootball.com. That we have a website, but primarily we've grown through YouTube and podcast format, and we have right at 75,000 followers
right now,
growing every day, and enjoy talking real football talk. We don't get on there and talk a lot of pop culture, anything like that. It's mostly football. We have a very popular show mm-hmm. in the morning, if you're a Texas fan, called Coffee and Football. Every morning from 8 Central to about 9:15, myself, Jerry Hamilton, and Blake Monroe talk football. Rod Babers is a former player at the University of Texas. He's joined us. Jeff Howe, longtime guy. CJ Vogel. We're all on there on Texas football. Find us on video, podcast, website,
et cetera.
And you got 4 different shows? How many different shows now?
Well, we do around 25 a week. Yeah, we do a lot. We start with
especially
coffee.
For the waking up till you go to
bed. Oh yeah, I mean we're Texas football. We do it right. We do it big. I mean, come on. I know, and you know, Baylor has their once a week show. So, I'm joking because actually they have a great
show with
David Smoke there. But my thought is like, look, I want to cover Texas football the way I would want it covered, and I'm. You know, and so we try to do a really good job and bring people inside the game, talk about recruiting, talk about X's and O's, talk about a little bit of the soap opera behind the scenes and what's happening with, like, our big topic right now, college
football, right?
Mm-hmm. Is how are the freshmen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Those guys from Georgia, Texas got, they're really good.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're talking about
right now.
Spring ball getting ready to come up March 25th.
We're ready for it.
I could tell you the last thing. Well, I mean, nothing you didn't know, but surprised the hell out of a lot of the Georgia folks that Terry went to Texas.
I've got it. So if you'll oblige me, I was in that morning. I was in Atlanta for I guess championship. It was SEC championship, yeah. Right? And I'm broadcasting our morning show from the College Football Hall of Fame. I was mm-hmm. coffee and football mm-hmm. and they were nice enough to let us in there. And so I'm there and I get a text. I'm like, he's down to Texas, Georgia, we thought, but it had been a lot of other schools and always Georgia, right? It mm-hmm. was blah, 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 Auburn, Florida, Texas, and Georgia
mm-hmm.
or Georgia and blah, blah, you know? So as a longtime observer of recruiting, which you, it's Georgia.
Right.
Right. Because that's the con. There's always and Georgia. Right. That's the commonality. And I get a text while I'm on the show and it asked me, are you going to his press announcement? I'm like, no. I mean, Manchester, Georgia is an hour and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I've got to get back for a happy hour we're hosting at 4:00. And so I said, you know what? And nobody told me what he was going to do. I don't know if the
teams really knew
what he was going to do, but I said, I'll go down there and drive down there. Well, I drive. I mean, I break some land speed records in that rental car. And I get there like 5 minutes after he's announced. I get a text saying he went to Texas. I'm literally turning on the last little turn to get into Manchester as he's doing. I'm like, oh, great. But it was he is one of the guys that we are hearing behind the scenes in
Texas that has a chance to be
really, really good. They've talked about
specifically his
kind of locked in mentality. You know, some guys just,
yep,
it's a snap of a finger and they're all in and they're locked in and doing whatever the coach has asked, acting like a professional,
mm-hmm.
doing it to get, apparently he's one of those. So it could be could end up being a huge win for Texas
with Justice Terry.
Yeah, and in the SEC, you gotta have them linemen.
Yes, on both sides.
Yep.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest surprise. Talk about Texas
joining the SEC
is that Kyle Flood and Steve Sarkisian came in at just the time on the offensive line. Because if it would have been 3 years earlier, Swiss cheese.
Like in Norman.
That's exactly right. It would not have been as, it would not look that way. I mean,
yeah.
Texas fans were, we got overwhelmed by Georgia at times. Well, everybody gets overwhelmed by
Georgia.
It would have looked a lot different. But Stark and those guys came in at the right time on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
They'd actually already recruited Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat and Alfred Collins on the defensive line. It was the offensive line
of Texas that needed reconnoitering, and they did that in short fashion.
All right, I think I kept you long enough, so thanks again for coming in, man. This is awesome.
All right, Mike, I appreciate you. Good luck to that SEC podcast and what you're doing. I watch it and have fun with it. And we kind of check in, you know, with the SEC brethren.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the Pirate, and the Pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.